Hey, everybody, you are listening to my manic midday monologue. That's right, I have changed Monday to manic in because it occurs to me the point of this podcast is to reflect upon the previous week's projects and activities as an artist in downtown Phoenix and to plug anything I have coming up. Monday is usually the perfect pivotal moment to look back and forward at such things, but every now and then what I'm looking back at was so exhausting that to tag it with this podcast, to create that obligation for myself, makes it less fun. And the point of this stuff is to have fun. So I've changed Monday to manic. I've made it less time restrictive. So every now and then I'm going to record one of these on Tuesday or even Wednesday. I know it's gasp worthy, but just the nature of this business, that business being one that trades in fun and not financial compensation. So again, my name is Russ. Thanks for clicking play or for downloading this thing. I appreciate it. The point is to give you a peek behind the curtain at my exploits as an artist, like I said, in downtown Phoenix. And looking back at last week, well, the weekend was consumed by amazing Arizona Comic-Con. And so I'm going to talk about that. It was a great show. My sincere thanks to Jimmy J and Holly. They're the organizers of the event. They have a whole crew that comes out of California and puts on, well, the circuit of amazing Comic-Cons, and their year starts here in Phoenix, I believe, with the amazing Arizona Comic-Con. So thank you guys so much for putting on a nice industry-specific show. You know, Comic-Cons have grown so huge over the past decade that it's hard to define them as Comic-Cons anymore. They're more pop culture conventions. And there's nothing wrong with that. San Diego, New York, even our local con here in Phoenix, the Phoenix Comic-Con in June, is really a multimedia expo featuring all facets of entertainment media, from film and television to video games to fashion, with an emphasis on cosplay, and graphic tees, hoodies. Vendors do well to trade in that stuff. Comic books are definitely the inspiration, but they're definitely not what's the concentration, if you will. If I had to say a sentence that ended with two words that had a similar suffix. So, yes, comic books are definitely the inspiration, but not the concentration. Perhaps they're the facilitation and the motivation, but there's so much more information to be gleaned from these pop culture conventions, like the one in San Diego, New York, Phoenix, Denver, Salt Lake City, and so on. The amazing Arizona Comic-Con is still very industry-specific. The top guests billed at this year's amazing Arizona Comic-Con were the likes of Rob Liefeld, co-creator of Deadpool. Yes, Deadpool is killing it in the box office right now, but Liefeld is first and foremost a comic book writer and artist. Kevin Eastman, again, co-creator of one of the world's biggest franchises of all time, the Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles. But Kevin Eastman still fancies himself first a comic book writer and artist. X-Men writer extraordinaire Chris Claremont. George Perez, a superstar when it comes to superhero comic book artistry. These were the top names at the amazing Arizona Comic-Con. And again, my sincere thanks to Jimmy J, to Holly Jensen and their crew for putting on such a great show. I often exhibit at these conventions in Artist's Alley, selling my self-published mini comic book series, Amazing Arizona Comics, the name remarkably similar to Amazing Arizona Comic-Con, but no affiliation whatsoever, other than I am one of many exhibitors in Artist's Alley. Now, I've been doing that for a long time, exhibiting at Comic-Cons. My first was San Diego Comic-Con, the big one. In 2001, my buddy Brent and I drove from Orange County to San Diego on a Saturday in the year 2000. In the year 2000! And we walked right up to the box office, the ticket selling table, wherever. We might have waited in a line briefly, but it wasn't certainly part of the show. It wasn't the culture of the con. We just stood in a line, we bought some tickets, we walked right in on a Saturday at a San Diego Comic-Con. We enjoyed it so much, we said, we got to come back here next year and sell some stuff. We got to get a table. So we got a table in the small press section, and we sold our self-published book, The Successors. We practically fell flat on our face with it, but it was a fun time, and we continued doing that for several years until I think it was 2007 when we got a letter saying you're now on a waiting list. And we joined the ranks, the masses, the horde of small press publishers and artists striving to exhibit at the San Diego Comic-Con. Now, I have done it a few times since then, but it's never a sure thing, not like it was when we began. And I've also exhibited with Brent and myself at many other shows, like the Small Press Expo in Maryland, the Alternative Press Expo in San Francisco. Of course, there's Phoenix Comic-Con. There's the amazing Las Vegas Comic-Con put on by Jimmy Holly and company. I do comic book store signings. I pop up in a record store if I can. Wherever will have me, I'm there with my comics. So I've been doing this kind of thing for a long time in a multifaceted way. And I've developed philosophies, practices, best practices for me. Just the way I approach a show like a Comic-Con and any other signing. So I have a very specific view when it comes to this stuff, coming from a breadth of experience. So what I'm going to do with this podcast is make some specific recommendations to Comic-Con organizers. Now, I'm going to reference Amazing Arizona Comic-Con a lot because that's the one I just attended. But this is by no means a criticism of the Amazing Comic-Cons. That's why I prefaced all of this by saying a thanks to its organizers for keeping it so industry-specific. I do believe that Jimmy has a mission that he's fulfilling with these shows to have a Comic-Con grow at the rate others have grown, but to keep them intimate to the comic book industry. I see that in how he markets and organizes these shows, how they're run. Boots on the ground, as I'm in Artist's Alley. But again, to Jimmy and any other Comic-Con organizer, I have just a few suggestions because I feel like from Artist's Alley, morale is low, is probably the best way to put it. Because, like I say, when I started exhibiting at San Diego, self-publishing a mini comic book or zine, we were in what was called the small press section. We were surrounded by other artists like us, Brett and I were. We were creating our own books, zines, publications, and artists that sold prints or sketch cards or boasted their portfolios, they had their own section called Artist's Alley. And over the years, those two sections have kind of merged. The lines have been blurred by way of the table's affordability. They're the lowest priced tables in the joint. You could get a booth, but you're going to pay probably 50 to 150% more for that table. So you get an Artist's Alley table or a small press table, even if you're not necessarily making prints or books, if you're crafting, like pressing pins or sewing comic book character themed beanies or plush dolls, that stuff has now found its place into Artist's Alley or the small press section as well. So it's very difficult to distinguish. We're all paying the same price for those tables, but the price points range from 50 cents for a pin to $2 to $5 for a self-published comic or zine, right up to, $10 to $20 for a print. We're all paying the same price for the table, but when I break it down like that, you understand that some of us at the $2 to $5 price point have to sell twice as much as those with prints that are marked $10 to $20. We have to sell twice as much to make our table back and then beyond to spin some sort of profit. And so I say morale is low because of that. At one point in time over the course, really of just a decade ago, small press publishers had their own section and were competing with each other at comparable price points. Now, the competition for an attendee's dollar is fierce because you're talking about a $20 print or handmade plush doll, which takes just as much time and talent for the artist to pull off, but need not be sold in the kind of quantity I would have to push my $2 to $5 paper folded and stapled to make a comic or zine. You see what I'm saying there. There's also the elephant in the room of any given Comic-Con, that the con itself is our fiercest competitor. The con itself costs, anywhere between $20 to $40 to get in, whether it's a day or for the weekend. You got to pay $10 to park. If you're out for the day, you grab a bite to eat, maybe lunch and dinner. So by the time an attendee reaches my Artist's Alley table at the back of the convention hall, not only are they already $60 in the hole because of all those logistical details I just listed, but they've passed all of the big-time vendors here in Arizona. Specifically, I'll say Samurai Comics, front and center, rightfully so, a great shop. You pass all of those vendors, and so by the time you get to Artist's Alley, well, it's about lunchtime. You're possibly already exhausted from waking up early, putting on all your cosplay, hopping in the car, doing the drive, paying for parking. You pay to get in. You buy a couple of comics or manga titles or a T-shirt or a hoodie up near the Samurai Comics area. By the time you make your way to the back of the convention hall, you know, you look at the hot dog stand and you look at me and you lean toward the hot dog stand because that guy's just selling more comics and I'm already at the limit of my budget. See, that's where the morale kind of kicks in and affects us artists. Now, Artist's Alley, I got to assume, contributes to the general bread and butter of a Comic-Con facilitator. We got to be contributing to the overall profit. And rightfully so. Again, this is a business. I'm not saying that with any sense of bitterness. We got to pay to be there. We do, and we're there. The hope is that, in addition to the exposure, we make a little bit of money. We find that encouragement from the commerce that comes with selling your own art. And as the competition grows more fierce between not just our fellow artists that are selling crafts that are definitely at a higher price point, rightfully so, then again, I say the con itself is our fiercest competitor. Theoretically, somebody could pay for the pass, for the parking, for the lunch and dinner, walk around the con and enjoy the cosplay, look at the art as if they were in a gallery or museum, and they need not pay a thing beyond that. If you put Kevin Eastman, Rob Liefeld, Chris Claremont up front and center, as had been the case in Amazing Arizona Comic Con, and so I'm not picking on one show. Jim Steranko, specifically, was front and center at Phoenix Comic Con, one of the biggest guests of the show. There he was, right when you walked in, practically again next to Samurai and some of the other big comic book stores and vendors of the Valley. Well, you walk in, you see those big-name guests. What incentive do you have as an attendee to go past those tables? Now, I know, of course, everybody does. But if you're selling the Comic-Con as this is the place to come meet Kevin Eastman, the architect of your childhood dreams, you know, as the co-creator of the Ninja Turtles, what incentive does a general attendee that's just coming to their first Comic-Con have to go past the biggest names, the most marketable names, what they know the show will be, and then you see a comic book store or two and maybe you pick up a thing or two there? What incentive is there to go past that? And that's the struggle we artists in the back often face. We hear it all the time. I'm not talking out of school. This is shared. This is like an inside joke with artists that attendees will walk by a table and say, oh, I'm just doing my first lap right now. I'll be back. I'll be back and look at your book then. I'll buy your book then. Or, oh, I'm all out of money today, but I'm coming all weekend. I'll be back tomorrow. Or, I do all my big buying on Sunday, so for the first 2 days, I'm just looking, and then I'll be back on Sunday. Or, oh, I'm totally out of money. I just had lunch. I just went. Now I'm just looking. Oh, let me get your card. I'll look you up online later. We hear that stuff all the time. Now, what if? So I've presented this problem to you. Okay, I have a solution. It's a simple one, but perhaps more radical than even I, as somebody that does not organize a huge Comic-Con, understand. But I have a solution to this, something that will raise the morale in Artist's Alley or even in the booth section, those vendors that have splurged a little bit more. Swap the floor layout. I've seen cons do this. Phoenix Comic-Con's Fan Fest had something of a layout like this. I don't know if it was intentional, but hear me out here. For a show like Amazing or Phoenix Comic-Con, swap the layout. So the biggest names and vendors are in the back of the convention hall, and when attendees first walk in, they're walking into Artist's Alley. Now, why would you do something like that? Here's how I'm describing the Comic-Con right now. It's laid out like an airplane. The most expensive seats are in the front, first class, and we all have to pass first class to get to the cheap seats, the business class, coach, in the back. And that's what we artists that have our tables in Artist's Alley, that's what we're doing. We're walking through the more expensive tables, the booths, and by the time we get to the back, you know, we're near the bathrooms. It's like walking onto an airplane. You realize just how cheap your seats are. You realize just how many amenities those in the front have. And what kills us a lot of the times, at least psychologically, is to see all of those tables empty because the big-name guests are obligated to panels or they don't have to be there right at 10 o'clock. They're not worried about trying to make a table cost back because they are guests, after all. So you see where I'm going with this approach. If you want to improve morale, if you want me to feel like I'm getting the most bang out of my buck, so even if I don't get it back through Comic-Con sales, I at least feel like I had every chance in the world. You put me in the front, so you don't organize the con like an airplane. You organize it like a rock show. Now, when you go to a rock show, the opening acts are nobodies. The people you see first are up-and-comers at best, and then maybe you find some that you like and follow, and they gain notoriety at that point. That's the dream of a Comic-Con Artist Alley exhibitor, is to gain some notoriety, some momentum, some fandom. Well, if you put us in the front, we're getting attendees at their best. It's the beginning of their day, too. So there's still a little bit of money in their pocket. They're still excited to see the show versus what we usually get in the back. That whole, I can't tell you how many times from my table I've had to direct people to the bathroom. They think I'm an information booth. Maybe it's just the look on my face. I'm so warm and hospitable. But if I was in the front, I don't think they'd ask those questions because they don't have to go pee. They've just walked into the show. They're excited, the enthusiasm, the energy is there. And then as they make their way further back, the acts become more recognizable vendors with commercial notoriety and success. And by the time you've reached the end, if you will, of the show, there's Kevin Eastman, there's Rob Liefeld, there's Chris Claremont. These are the big names, the top acts, those at the top of the poster. Those are the acts that were billed. And I can guarantee you that your attendees then get a second wind because this is who we're here to see. They're Samurai Comics. I know that brand. I know that store. Oh, let me buy something from them too. It completely changes the culture of the con, and I think it strengthens the later hours of the day. And if somebody still uses those excuses, those reasons, as legitimate or not legitimate as they may be to an artist, in Artist Alley, I walk in, I see Artist Alley, I make my way through, hey, I'm saving my money, or, you know, this is not my buying day. At least when they do return once again, that row is the first they see. They're reminded, oh, I talked to that person. Oh, I wanted to check that stuff out. We're not lost in the back of the room. It's a simple switch, but I think it would change the culture of the con for the better. And again, for both the exhibitor and the attendee. At Amazing Arizona Comic Con, the second half of Saturday was remarkably slow. Now, I know a lot of people probably attended panels. Maybe they had come on Friday as well, so they had seen the back of the room. They didn't make their way back there on the second day. Maybe they were planning on hitting it on their third day if they were attending the entire weekend. I'm not slighting the show. I'm just telling you what I experienced. Now, from an artist's perspective, if I was in the front of the room, I would have no choice but to see these masses. And then it's on me if I fail. It is on me if people don't come to my booth. It's on me as far as my enthusiasm, the banner behind me and the eye-catching graphics. All of those things we put into our display, it gets a greater shot at being recognized. Versus Kevin Eastman, Rob Liefeld. They don't need it because the names alone draw the crowd. And again, you see them later in the day, well, it gives you that second win. These are the artists I came to see. These are the top acts. That's why when you go to like a big concert, the surge starts at like 10 p.m. when the big band finally makes the stage, you know? So I think if you organize a Comic-Con with that kind of mentality, it could be just, if not even more so successful throughout the day. My buddy Marty, that publishes some of the best zines in town, by the way, I think he self-publishes as the Federal Bureaucratic Commission. So my buddy Marty had another analogy for this. You lay out a Comic-Con like a grocery store. See, now the grocery store has all the essentials in the back, the milk, the eggs, the meat. I never thought about it like this, but yeah, you got to make your way through. You never walk into a grocery store and think, you know what I need is a big tin of cheesy popcorn. You never go there with that on your list, but you end up buying it from time to time because they put it front and center. When you walk in, there it is with all the other seasonal items. So you got to make your way through that crap that you would never buy, but it's so front and center that you see it anyway, and you buy it. It's, oh, yeah, oh, I do like that. Yeah. And then by the time you make your way to the back, there's the the stuff you use to make lunch and dinner, vegetables. It's all around the far edges of the store. What if you laid out a Comic-Con like that? So you actually had to make your way through the stuff you wouldn't have necessarily purchased had you not seen it otherwise, like My Comics, independently published stuff. And then by the time folks reach the back of the con, well, there are the essentials, your Kevin Eastmans, your Rob Liefelds, and so on. You see the analogy here and how simple yet radical it is in its approach. I think it would be mutually beneficial for all. I would also strongly encourage con organizers to think about shortening the hours of any given Comic-Con. Comic-Cons usually go until 6 or 7 in the evening, and that last hour, the last few hours, arguably, are often just a total waste. I do make sales during those hours. I do enjoy the waning crowds when I then have a chance to socialize with my exhibiting neighbors and talk to some of my fellow artists. But from the sense of interacting with con crowd attendees, you know, the con crowd, if you shorten the day by a couple of hours, it creates more of a sense of urgency to truly see everything that there is to be seen, so attendees don't waste time grabbing a hot dog, getting lunch, sitting down, loitering along the walls, being wallflowers. That's become a part of the show's culture and aesthetic as much as anything else. And frankly, you can eliminate that and make the show a much more poignant, well-spent period of time if you just cut the hours by a few at the end. Now, if you organize a Comic-Con, I understand what you're thinking. Well, I have to pay X amount of dollars, and I get the entire convention hall, so why not maximize my amount of time? I got to pay for, like, liability insurance and stuff. I want to use that convention hall for as long as I can. I'm not talking about the quantity of time. I'm talking about the quality of time. Because, again, it's become a part of the culture for attendees to just lean against the wall, charge their phones, while they sit cross-legged on the ground, just waiting for enough battery to get back out there. Spending time at food vendors like it's a food court. And as that happens, we exhibitors slowly but assuredly wilt into our seats. We make less eye contact. The energy is gone. The enthusiasm wanes. And so those final few hours of any given day, even the first from time to time, well, it just becomes a buzzkill. And that's human nature. We can defeat that obstacle as both exhibitors, attendees, and organizers by understanding, okay, the day is just too long. If we could shorten it by a few hours, yeah, I might not be getting as much bang for my buck with the quantity of time. And I'm speaking as an exhibitor as well. I'm paying for that table space too. But it's not the quantity I want so much anymore, it's the quality. I want the last few hours of my day at the con to be as energetic, enthusiastic, and optimistic for my sales as the first few are. And if that means the con floor closes at 3 as opposed to 5, 6, or 7, well then, so be it. I could say then, in good conscience, that I was making sales until the very end, regardless of when the end was. So that's my point. I think these are the solutions I'm posing to the problems at hand. When it comes to low morale in Artist's Alley, and I guess I should conclude with this. You know, I love Comic-Con. How can I, as a comic book fan, not love the fact that I have my own Lollapalooza, something that's dedicated just to comics, and that celebrates the culture that has spawned from my generation's love of superheroes and comic books? Everything I've just described is by no means meant to slight, disparage, discourage, or harshly criticize the existence and nature of Comic-Cons today. What I'm saying is that a significant amount of Comic-Con floor space is dedicated to relatively unknown publishers, vendors, and exhibitors that seek to make their mark on the industry just as much as the things we all love have. And Comic-Con's such a great place to do that. Why not find some simple solutions to make it more viable for everyone? Because you know what will happen? I mentioned that we exhibitors are at least some of that bread and butter. Well, what will happen is we'll find other avenues for exhibition. I myself am organizing smaller shows right here in the Valley because I feel like Phoenix Comic-Con has outgrown my fellow small press artists. print artists are still finding their place. Crafters that make beautiful beanies and plush dolls, they still get in because, again, they could price their stuff at such a point where if you're paying $200 to $300 for a table, you need only sell 20 to 30 items at 10 bucks a piece to make your table back. You could do that on a great first day as opposed to those of us selling zines at $2 to $5 a pop. There's just as much heart and a lot more content that goes into that product, but we have to sell twice, if not three times as much, just to make the table cost back. It's a lot of overhead. So while I can't disparage the con for its passion for the things I love, I can say that the overhead is beginning to outweigh my ability to attend as an exhibitor. I would just attend now as a fan, just a fan, you know. And I wouldn't be a merchant anymore. I would be a customer. That's a tough decision to make when you've been doing it for as long as I have, and I see so many of my fellow artists making those decisions. And so, like I said, I've decided to organize some smaller shows, like PIX, the Phoenix Independent Comic Show. That's coming up next month. I'll talk about that in a later podcast in greater detail, but I'm not the only one that's creating these grassroots alternatives to the ever-expanding Comic-Con scene. The two can exist at the same time. They can coexist peacefully. One certainly does not completely contrast or outweigh or overpower the other. I think both have a place as pop culture itself and mainstream media embraces superheroes and comic books. But I also think that the spirit of one can exist in the spirit of the other, so not only do they coexist physically, but philosophically as well. And let me just end it with that. I love Comic-Con. I hope that my small press endeavors always have a place there. If the day comes that they don't, I hope cons can continue to survive without us, but I think the model would have to change completely. It would become more of an expo than a commercial venture for so many artists. It would basically just become a sprawl of a gallery and a cosplay fashion show. Nothing wrong with that, but we have to embrace that as the possibility of the future of Comic-Con, leaving us to then find our own grassroots, homemade, DIY alternatives. So make mine con, is what I'm saying. Okay, that's going to wrap it up for because this was quite the manic monologue, and that's the new name of the thing, so it makes a lot of sense. My name is Russ. Thanks for listening. You could follow me on Instagram at AmazingAZComics, and I'll catch you next week, whatever day I so choose to record my manic midday monologue. Thanks a lot, everybody.